Welcome to Managing Safety, brought to you by the Florida Aviation Network, an effort of the National Aviation Safety Foundation and a coalition of local, regional, and national aviation organizations and agencies. This talk show addresses strategies for thinking in today's complex aviation world. Now, here's Ben Coleman, president of Aerospace Management System Institute in Lakeland, Florida, who is today's host.
Hello and welcome to Florida Aviation Network's Sun and Fun live presentation. This is the 40th annual Sun and Fun fly-in and expo. I'm Ben Coleman, one of your hosts here for Florida Aviation Network, and it's always our pleasure to bring to our audience selected folks that have a message to share with us. There's always a safety thread in this message, and our gentleman here that we have today is no different. With us today is Lieutenant Colonel Tom Stork Courtney.
Hello, how are you, Ben?
Lieutenant Colonel Courtney, or
yes. Tom?
Thank you, Tom. Tom, you're with an outfit that both protects us or will take us out.
So, hopefully not the second one, but yes, the first one.
But we're here to make sure that you don't have to take us out.
Right.
And one way to do that is to probably follow some of your guidelines that you'd like to share with us today.
Yeah, absolutely. The outfit I'm with is Headquarters NORAD, which is the North American Aerospace Defense Command. We're responsible for defending North America with our partners, the Canadians. And the primary thing we're here for is to educate the general aviation community on temporary flight restrictions, how to know where they are, how to avoid them, how to operate in and around them, and what to do if you ever find yourself accidentally in one and get intercepted. Mm. There's quite a few temporary flight restrictions the FAA publishes for a variety of reasons. Most of them all have a safety element like you talked about. Mm-hmm. Natural disasters, forest fires. We're interested in the security ones, which are usually bigger. We'll bring more attention on you if you violate them, and almost always associated with where the president is or where a national security event is that the Secret Service deems important enough, which is typically like the Super Bowl, G8 summit, UN assemblies, political conventions.
Anyway, a large gathering of people.
Right, or something that they perceive could be a target, like the president's location.
Right. So. And Tom, our audience is a cross-section of housewives, lawyers, doctors, former military folks, but NORAD, to a lot of folks, they think of NORAD and you imagine these big round bubbles out in Colorado, and that's what they, that's NORAD. Well,
right.
Could you explain a little bit more about NORAD, the acronym, and just what NORAD does?
So NORAD started in the 50s. It was originally started as a combined joint command, binational command between Canada and the United States to defend North America, essentially from that time, from the Russians or anyone who wanted to attack us in the Cold War. It has morphed to continue to do that job, but also post September 11th, you know, more of our focus has looked inside of the continent to determine if there's any threats, you know, that aren't coming from the outside, but that we need to defend against. So that's really something that became in effect after September 11th this year. Our focus became both outside and inside the North America.
And NORAD is a, of course, it's a government agency. I'm wondering if you could share with us, when we have funding issues and we talk about the government shutting down, how does that affect NORAD?
Operationally, we did okay. So there was quite a few civilians that worked there, and they were laid off for a while. Some of the active duty folks picked up, you know, time and some of the things they did. Some things didn't get done. There's air defense units all over North America. There's 16 of them in the continental United States. They were all funded, so that was a priority thing. Some of the units, the National Guard units that provide the two airplanes on alert, didn't get some money to do training and other things, but the funding of the airplanes on alert continued. You know, it was a required, like a lot of things in the Defense Department, a mandatory spending item.
Well, and I know this is kind of a sensitive subject, but I don't believe we as a nation would shoot ourselves in the foot to expose ourselves. And again, I don't believe that people fully understand and appreciate what NORAD does to help keep them safe. But they sure know when they get tangled up with folks in the air. This is where I think you guys are doing a great job of trying to get the word out. But you know, you can push it out, but you got to have a receiver. And unless they're receiving your message, how are they going to keep from tangling up with you?
Exactly. The Department of Defense and the Secret Service and really the whole of government has been trying to reduce the amount of people that violate temporary flight restrictions, particularly ones that are defended by the Secret Service and by NORAD, where the president's at. Everyone who violates them so far has been by accident, and it essentially just makes a lot of work for the Secret Service, for the Defense Department, for the FAA, that people are accidentally buying these TFR, temporary flight restrictions. You know, they don't know, we don't know until we identify the person and sort of can characterize what the airplane's doing, if it's a threat or not. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of government resources that are spent on intercepting people that are just making a mistake until they can determine what, you know, what their intent is. So the goal of the DOD and the Secret Service is to get out and try to reduce the number of people who accidentally violate TFR so they can manage the temporary flight restriction and hopefully anyone who violates it is a threat and they don't have to sort through all the people who are just doing it accidentally. So that's why we come to this Fun and Sun. We've been here 4 years. We go to Oshkosh as well, and we're just trying to reach out to as many general aviation pilots as possible who 90% of them are aware of all the things we tell them, but it's the 10% out there that, you know, don't flight plan, don't talk on the radio, kind of do their own thing, and then something temporary bites, you know, jumps up and bites them one day.
And again, this is still America. It is still free, and we're still free to come and go and do pretty much what we want, but there's certain areas that from time to time we need to be aware of, and how do you try to get to those folks that just either don't want to comply, they don't have radios in the aircraft, they don't like radios, don't believe in them, never will.
Right.
And they want to be, if I want to fly in my airplane from Florida to California, I don't want to talk to a soul, I'm not going to get above 1,000 feet. How do you deal with somebody like that?
And we meet people like that all the time and completely understand that, and you're right, it's a free country and you are free to fly wherever you want for the most part. But we always give the example, you know, you can't go flying over right through Chicago O'Hare without following some rules. There are certain places for safety or whatever that you're not free to fly without doing certain things. So what bites people is the temporary nature of the flight restrictions. You know, there's a permanent flight restricted area in Washington, D.C. that has some rules about how you fly in it and an area that's smaller that you can't fly in. And we don't have a tremendous amount of trouble there because it's permanent in nature and the people who fly around there are used to it and they understand it. What bites a lot of people, your example is I want to fly across the country and not talk to anybody and, you know, something temporary popped up that they don't know about. And we try to reach out to folks, places like this, and tell them, you know, hey, talking on the radio if on a flight plan is the best thing. That'll keep you out of trouble. The air traffic control agency is going to tell you, hey, there's a restriction up ahead. You need to, you know, turn or whatever. But we understand folks don't want to do that, and we encourage them, if you don't have a radio or don't want to talk on the radio, you know, at least do some mission planning and check the NOTAMs. There's lots of, the flight service station will give you any information. Mm-hmm. It's out on the NOTAMs. The FAA has a website that publishes all this stuff. And, you know, that'll keep you out of trouble. It's nothing, if you give the flight service station your general route of flight, they'll give you everything within 100 miles that, you know, could be a factor for you. So we encourage everybody to make that call to weather brief before they fly, just to keep themselves out of trouble.
I'm sure that the gentleman that we spoke about, or the lady that we spoke about that just wants to fly across country without talking to anybody, nowadays that's probably becoming the exception rather than the rule. Back in the day, 60s, 70s, 80s, that was probably a rule when you had a light fabric aircraft.
Right.
But now the aircraft are getting so sophisticated, and some of the home builds have better avionics than probably that United 737 you fly.
They absolutely do. Sometimes there's some amazing products out there that will give people situational awareness on, you know, everything they need to know, to include, you know, if you're connected to through the ADS-B network, you'll get the temporary flight restrictions displayed on whatever avionics or, you know, iPad, tablet type device. So we talk to tons of people who have all that information. And they're doing, you know, they're not the problem usually. It's the folks who, you know, like the simpler aircraft and don't have all that, or maybe it fails on them one day. So you're right, it is the exception.
Yeah, and but it's that exception that I don't want to read about in the paper.
Right.
Again, as I shared with you as we were talking about the training aspect, I feared the day that somebody started wandering into an area and they didn't pick up the cues. What type of cues would a NORAD instigated intercept, what kind of cues would they look for?
So,
worst case scenario, here I am. I'm in my little Iraqo champ. I'm just kind of bugging through the air. And just all of a sudden, wow, what was that? What am I looking at?
So, if you violate a temporary flight restriction, it is defended by NORAD, and it's there for a reason, typically a Secret Service, you know, directed reason. You may or may not get intercepted, depending if you're just skirting the corner of it. You know, the FAA may just continue to track your airplane, figure out where you land, and someone may come and meet you to find out what you were doing. Depending on the assessment of NORAD and the Secret Service and other law enforcement agencies, if you are pointed right at the center, pointed at the thing they're trying to defend, you may get an intercept. And the goal of the intercept is to two things: identify you, try to characterize what you're there doing, and to get you out of the area. So a typical intercept, a fighter airplane is going to come up on the left side of your aircraft. He wouldn't be there if they could have got a hold of you on the radio. So, you know, air traffic control is going to try to call you on the radio, try to call you on the frequencies that are used in the area you're flying, try to call you on guard on 121.5, and they're going to do all those things first. If they can identify the tail number, or you were squawking, or somebody knows where you take off, they may call your cell phone even if it's on file. So once they intercept you, really they're trying to characterize, you know, what you're doing. Typically it surprises general aviation pilots when they have been intercepted. They'll give you a little wing rock if they can't talk to you on the radio to show you that you've been intercepted, and they're expecting you to acknowledge that with a wing rock. And their next goal, if they can't get you on the radio, is to, they'll turn in a direction, and basically they want you to turn in that direction. Mm-hmm. That's going to be the shortest direction out of the area so that, you know, they don't perceive you to be a threat. And that's really what they're trying to do, is assess whether you're a threat or not, which, you know, thankfully no one has turned out to be, you know, in any of these restrictions lately, and get them out of the area. That's the two things they're trying to do. Mm-hmm. So once you leave the area, NORAD's kind of out of the business. You know, we're in the business of defending or that temporary flight restricted area. Now, the fact that you violated it becomes an FAA problem and maybe a law enforcement problem. So NORAD will kind of leave you alone, and the FAA will track you for a while. If they find out where you land, they may send somebody out to talk to you. Typically, local law enforcement, to get your number, find out what your story was. Oh, I didn't know I was, you know, I didn't know where I was. That kind
of
thing.
At that point, does NORAD kind of they kind of back out of it? It's okay.
Absolutely. We're not a law enforcement agency. We're not the FAA. Our job is to get people out of the airspace or deal with someone who is a threat and stop them from, you know, their threatening behavior, which thankfully we haven't had to do. After you leave the area, it becomes really an FAA and law enforcement thing, and more so an FAA. They'll look at, you know, they could take certificate action and fine you based for not following the notice, right?
And Tom, I've been hammering you hard on NORAD stuff, but what do you do for fun to fly?
For work to fly, I don't do anything. I don't do any general aviation flying. I'd like to hopefully get into it someday.
But we can turn that around.
Yeah,
we?
This is okay. A good place. The aircraft financing booth is right across from
Absolutely.
Our booth and hangar.
That's right.
I work at, I'm part-time reserve, U.S. Air Force Reserve officer at NORAD, so I work a few days a month doing this and working in the command center there, you know, staying up all night and watching the world.
Drinking coffee,
and then on my regular job is I fly 737s for United Airlines. So.
Where are you based?
Houston. I fly to Houston.
Oh, that's good.
First officer, so.
A lot of
activity. Get to go to a lot of places. So
a lot of movement out of Houston.
It's a good job. So I get enough flying in right now doing that, and really hope to get some more time someday to get into the general aviation business.
Okay, I'm going to ask you a real sensitive question here, and you may not be able to answer this, but I know you have top secret security clearance, but how much tailwheel time do you have?
Zero.
The guys in the truck, they're just falling apart. No, Ben, don't go there.
Yeah. So it's a 737 and the F-16, which I have like 2,200 hours, all tricycle.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that.
Yes.
I am too, a little bit. We have got to get you in something with the wheels on the right end of the airplane.
That would be fun. I'd enjoy that.
It is more fun than you can imagine. But you'd be surprised, the folks that, I mean, all the heavy metals you've been flying around and going at Mach and plus. It's a lot different world when you're taking off at 35 or 40.
I don't think I would be surprised. I know it is a lot different.
A gust of wind in your 7.3 is a lot different than a gust of wind in one of these aircraft. But it would give you a little different appreciation of how slow things happen and how much time you have to think about what you're doing. And that's why it's so important for, as you say, and one of your talking points was talk to somebody.
Right.
Stay on the radio and you got plenty of time to enjoy the scenery and the view. So
yeah, absolutely.
Use your radio equipment. Use it wisely.
Right. And even if you get flight following, you know, if somebody can tell you, hey, there's a temporary flight restriction going to open up in front of you 50 miles here in 5 minutes, you know, hey, great, then I won't be in trouble. Won't be in trouble with the FAA, won't be trouble with the Secret Service.
Sure.
You don't want any of that.
It's best all the way around. And even a VFR flight following, there's a lot of folks that even hesitate to use that because they don't want to be in the system.
And if you have a radio and you don't want to talk on the radio because you don't want to do, like you said, flight following, we encourage people to monitor 121.5 because the first thing they'll do after they can't get a hold of you on air traffic control frequencies is try to contact you on guard, give a position, and hey, you need to turn this direction for a temporary flight restriction. And that'll avoid the whole situation becoming more of a pain for you and for the pilot and for us.
True. And, you know, it's still a rule that if you're equipped with an aircraft with radios to monitor 121.5
right.
before you shut down.
Right.
So. And a lot of folks don't realize right. that. But it's all for the safety system.
Right.
And if you have a good system, typically you're going to be a pretty safe operator.
Just like I said, it's really all, there's a security element and a safety element, of course, too. And, you know, the temporary flight restrictions that we're not involved in are all safety related. So if you're flying over a place where they're having a forest fire and there's airplanes all over the place trying to fight that, you don't want to be, you know, have them near midair. You know, so monitoring the frequencies and knowing where that, you know, that's going to keep you out of trouble as well. They'll tell you about military training airspace that, you know, could potentially scare you if you're there. So it's a great plan to, you know, do some flight planning and talk to ATC.
Yeah. For a layperson, and the internet is, of course, our information highway, how interactive is your NORAD site for giving information out?
We have all the information that we're giving here at the show on our site. It's www.norad.mil. We don't have a button on the first page. You sort of have to navigate to it. So there's an About tab, and About NORAD. And if you open that up, there's general aviation down there, and you have all the information out here. So, and the FAA has websites, you know, the TFRs are all on the FAA, tfr.gov website, mm-hmm. and we have all that information we're handing out to folks on cards, and you can Google, if you Google TFRs, that website will come up, you know.
Right, there's so much information out there.
So it's all out there, and it's the people who are looking for it aren't the problem. It's the people who aren't looking for it that generally get themselves in trouble.
And that's, would you encourage pilots or anybody in the audience to join the alphabet groups, even if they don't fly, they don't own aircraft?
There's great information, absolutely. So, you know, I know IOPA has a service where NOTAMs will come out and or TFRs will come out, and you can get a tweet, you can get a text, you can get an email. So all yeah. those mm-hmm. alphabet groups, as you say, have services to help inform people, mm-hmm. you know, that aren't spending a lot of time mission planning. It'll come to them. They don't have to seek it out. So, you know, there's and we have several of those websites on the cards we're handing out as well. So there's great information if you're a digital person. Mm-hmm. You know, they'll get you the information. So.
Well, how about let's do a plug for NORAD and your hiring practices. We have a 8 or 9 year old person, boy or girl.
Yeah.
When I grow up, I want to be a NORAD pilot. How do we cultivate that little seed of
so
of
NORAD
interest?
Has it's more of a staff organization. So the airplanes assigned to NORAD to do NORAD's bidding are assigned to other units. So typically mm-hmm. they're National Guard. Almost all of them are Air National Guard up in Canada. It's the Canadian Air Force. So
you're going to steer them toward the military.
I would steer them towards the Air National Guard or the military. So, you know, most of our guys are Air Force units or Air National Guard units. And it's an Air National Guard mission for the most part because they're the National Guard protecting the homeland. So of the places where airplanes sit on alert, it's almost all National Guard that they assign two planes to NORAD, and they have their other planes. They're doing, you know, they're training for other missions, going to war, whatever they need to do. So,
and because hopefully the kids these days, if they hear this or watch this, it's just the term NORAD. It's just cool.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's in the
cool.
movies. Yeah, it's,
yeah. And you say NORAD. NORAD's been advised, so
right.
they know that it's a serious
right.
a matter, but. And we want our young people and our youth to really understand that, you know, this is serious business.
It
and
is.
We sometimes poke fun and make light of aviation and how much fun it is. Well, It can also be very, very traumatic if it's not done with a lot of planning and forethought. And if you don't know what you're doing, you typically don't need to be doing it. So that's why it's so important to have guests like yourself here. What else can you share with us to stimulate some of our youth? Because right now, as you can tell, walking around the campus, it's all about education. Aerospace Discovery, Center for Excellence at the Florida Air Museum. It's a mouthful, but it's a place to come and learn about aviation.
Yeah. And for the youth who are just getting into aviation, it's kind of interesting because most of the people we talk to are just getting into it. They're very connected, so this is not new. You know, the ability to find everything on the internet and get digital updates, seem to be very comfortable with it, most of the younger folks. So it's, you know, usually the folks that have been flying a long time that haven't adopted some of those techniques. So I'd, you know, just encourage them to continue to seek out, you know, information from, you know, websites or the FAA or, you know, what their flight instructors on what happens if I get intercepted. You know, most of them should know that it's all in the AIM. It might not be something they look at every day, but, you know, just remember that if it ever happens to you, you probably have lost some situational awareness somewhere along the line, and it's going to be a surprising event, and their goal is to not shoot you down. They want to get you out of the area, so it's they're not there to look at your pretty plane and and all that. So, you know,
how many? And I know in round numbers, and the public is typically they're into the negative aspects of you know, a car wreck on the highway. Everybody looks at the car wreck. Well, in your situation, any interceptions? How many would you average that you do have to actually get involved with? You mentioned EADS.
So, NORAD-wide, we have about 300 times a year we take what's called tactical action, which means we scramble fighters on somebody we have to identify who is either entering the country unidentified through the Air Defense Identification Zone or violating or about to violating a temporary flight restriction that's defended or in the National Capital Region in Washington, D.C. Mm-hmm. A small percent of those actually result in an intercept. Most of the time, before the airplanes get airborne or get to the general aviation aircraft, it's resolved. Either the person left the airspace or they got them on the radio and they stand down. So it's not that high of a number of general aviation aircraft that get intercepted every year, you know, 40 or 50, depending on the president's travels. There was last year, February of 2013, the president was near West Palm Beach somewhere for 2 days. And it was a particularly nice weekend for flying, and that was one of our worst. But there was 30 people in 2 days who violated the temporary flight restriction there. Wow. And that's one of the worst we've ever seen. Of that, 17 were identified, and the FAA took some sort of investigative action to find out what they were doing. Sometimes we don't identify who it is. They cut the corner, they take off and land really fast at an airport under the TFR before, and there's nobody at the airport to identify who it was. So occasionally we're unable to identify everyone who violated it.
But the thing is to realize, and for again the audience, is you're constantly vigil. Is there a moment in time that NORAD is not looking out? Big Brother's looking the skies.
That's our job. You know, NORAD was born out of defending the, you know, us in the Cold War, so it's 24/7, 365. There's a command center filled with lots of people watching the air picture all the time. So,
and again, I'm trying to recap now. Mostly it's the guard units that support
you.
Yeah.
So the people actually doing the flying are predominant. There's no rule that it has to be, but because of their nature as the Air National Guard and, you know, their charter somewhat to defend the homeland, it's predominantly Air National Guard units that are flying the airplanes. Mm-hmm. They are sitting alert, you know, for a real short notice takeoff at NORAD's direction. So they're not owned by NORAD, they're owned by the National Guard, but they work for NORAD. So,
Tom, I'm going to get a commitment out of you this point. This is a commitment. Now, do you know anybody that you fly with, either United or you hobnob with at NORAD, that has a general aviation airplane?
Yes. Well, some of the people, the group of us that was here before, does general aviation. So we have some folks out there. They have more money than me, I think.
Lieutenant Colonel, come on out.
Yeah. Well, maybe more desire, I guess.
Well, it's a matter of priorities.
Yeah,
and
it is.
A neighbor of mine, He retired recently from the National Guard, flying F-16s, and he is passionate about RV aircraft.
I love those.
He says it's a little RV-4 with a big motor on it and a constant speed prop. He says it handles just about as close to an F-16 as you can get.
Yeah, we met a couple RV pilots last year, and we're looking longingly at the airplane. Those are nice airplanes.
Well, one could be yours.
Yes, it could.
but I'm trying to get you to get out and cultivate that, and just go hang out at the airport and just say, "Hey, Barry, you'll be flying this weekend. I'd like you to hang out and will you take me up?" You know, that type of thing. Yeah. But I'm trying to get the best blend of your professional, and we thank you so much for your professional career. But we want you to develop. We worry about you. We don't want you to stress too much. But we want you to get some tailwheel time.
I do want to.
And you
don't have an airplane you could take me up in, do you?
I got them all.
Outstanding. Well, there you go.
Okay, we could go up the sea. Let's see. I don't know what we could probably.
I think we got a plan.
Maybe tomorrow. Maybe
that
tomorrow
good.
We could run up and hop into that one. But it would scare you to death. Because it's a short takeoff and landing.
I thought you were a good pilot. You're not going to.
No,
scare
the
me.
Airplane would scare you because it's tiny.
It is.
But as a matter of fact, I saw in one of the articles a cree-cree, a little cricket.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen a cricket?
I'm not familiar.
No. Oh man, it's 16-foot wingspan.
Yeah.
Single passenger. It's got two. It's a twin-engine aircraft. Single cylinder.
Nice. one in each engine, I hope.
Yeah, and it just
so two
goes
cylinders,
like, hey.
Two engines, right?
Two cylinders, two engines, or one cylinder per engine.
Right, but two total.
That's just what you need.
That's what I need.
I think that would be an excellent springboard from NORAD to get out to the general public to have Lieutenant Colonel Stork.
Yeah.
And
Stork,
okay,
yes.
quickly, before we head off, tell me about Stork.
That's just a call sign I was given a long time ago.
Do you have any diapers hanging around that you can carry around on the beach?
It's not the venue for discussing why I would name that. But that's usually
it's usually not.
It's usually an after 5 o'clock discussion. But I've had that nickname for a long time. Typically, most guys in fighter units they're given some sort of nickname. Most stay for their whole career. Sometimes somebody does something stupid and they get a new nickname.
Well, Tom, I'm going to think the other direction. And I'm going to think that it's carrying the baby home safely.
That may be it. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for joining us here.
Happy to be here.
Good. And thank you for joining us. This is Ben Coleman with Florida Aviation Network. And thank you.
We hope you've enjoyed today's Managing Safety, brought to you by the Florida Aviation Network, an effort of the National Aviation Safety Foundation and a coalition of local, regional, and national aviation organizations and agencies. Please visit our studio website to hear past programs.